Mm-hmm. Because he's defining what Rav Huna said in part A from Surah, which is Risufot. So, and we at the end of in Surah, the discussion ended with saying the Rav Huna's position is they have to be absolutely continuous, and not only that, but contiguous.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have one year on, one year off, one year on, one year off.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Now Rabbi Hama, although he's a student of Avayin Rava, but it's a later generation, the Pumbadita story starts where Surah ends. So Surah ended with the statement of Rabbi Huna.
Conceptually.
Is it categoric? Rabbi Hama says, no, it's not categoric. It has to do with, if there's a situation where a gap is normal or desirable, so then you don't have to break the desire, the normal planting cycle just to acquire a chazakah.
And Moshe, do you understand this?
I just came in.
So, that's why I mentioned.
So,
I knew that the other guy that looked before you was only a malach. So, I'm saying that maybe you can explain to you.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So, basically, even though the chronology of student-teacher is off,
yes.
The subject matter is flowing.
It's flowing. So, if you want to make it clear that the statement of Rav Huna is not a categorical statement,
mm-hmm.
It depends on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And in a situation in which the cycle of agriculture demands that you have a space between the planting and so on, Rav Huna would be more there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, maybe begin by explaining the number one and number two.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Kavod.
We have a Mishnah which talks about Shalosh Shanim, Minyom Leyom, 3 full years are needed to acquire a Hazakah. Then and only then you don't have to enter into evidence a Shita. Fine. Rav Huna comments on the Mishnah and says the Shalosh Shanim have to be Risufot. So in Surah, we want to know, what does that refer to? Isn't that inherent in Shalosh Shanim Minyom Leyom? No, you might think that Shalosh Shanim means full years, but they don't necessarily have to be 1 year right after the other. They could be with spaces inside. And that's not a terribly strange supposition, because in Seveh HaBaal you have that. And many misvod, shofar, for example, you could take all day to blow all those kolon. It makes no difference.
Right.
So why do you have to have... So that his comment adds something that have to be continuous.
Okay.
May I just say something? The word Shalosh Shanim, around the word Shalosh Shanim, there are 3 different terms. As a lawyer, if you look into, you're a lawyer and you see Shalosh Shanim, even if it says the word Miyom Leyom, you could be interpreted in 3 different ways. Again, the most important thing in when you study a text, a legal text, a well-written text, is Blackwell, the exclusionary principle. Yes, there was a famous Mabdil and quotes the whole of the America, like something like the Bet Yosef for English law is Blackwell, and Blackwell has a commentary and like a Bet Yosef. Yes, and exclusionary principle. Exclusionary principle means a text does not only mean what it says, but comes to exclude things. Alright? And now here we have 3 different terms. The other term, mekutaot. Shani mekutaot. Shani mekutaot are almanac calendar years. How? When you write a contract, you have to put the date. Now, in the entire ancient world, the years were counted from the moment that the king is a crown. You crown the king, and there is a year. Now, suppose the king was crowned today, yes?
Mm-hmm.
By Rosh Hashanah, you count the 2nd year to our Lord King George, or Greek King, blah, 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 blah. So, a year is mekutaot.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a full... The king did not really... was in power a full year. And yet you count it as if it was a full year. So you have one kind of year. It's mekutaot, which is the calendar year. All right? Again, the king was anointed the 29th of Elul. Yes, the first officiate, second year of our king. All right. Now that's one possible one kind of year. Mekutau, the one that comes from Almanac. Now came a second Rosh Hashanah. Yes, Rosh Hashanah Lamelachim. Mm-hmm. All right. Means from that moment on, you got another king. That's simple. Then you have years which are Mefuzarot. What do you mean Mefuzarot? Not contiguous. It's a full year, 365 days. Yes? But if I say 3 years, and although you understand miyom leyom, 365 days, but doesn't have to be one following the other, contiguous. Right? Now, here comes the point. In contract is written, Shalosh Shanim Miyom Leyom. Le'apuke means exclusionary principle. You could exclude either of two. You could say, this comes to exclude Mekuta'ot. But that doesn't come to exclude Mekuzarot.
Why is one of the two choices
not something? It's arbitrary.
No, why can't we both?
No, but you cannot demonstrate this.
Okay.
If you have this again, Rambam reads all these laws, and that explains it so beautifully in Tohen Benitan. It's a question of claims and counterclaims. You could claim that it means Mefuzarot. I say no. It claims it means Mekuta'ot.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot demonstrate this.
Okay.
So the only way is Ravuna has to make an addendum to the law and say no. Here it means Resufot, and the word Resufot means continuous and contiguous. Yes,
mm-hmm.
It's a full year and one continuous, contiguous up in the other. All right. So now we understand what Rav Huna is saying. Yes, there is a vacuum, a semantic vacuum. That's very important. A semantic vacuum in the law. All right. Because you could argue either way, and again, part of being intelligent is to know what you're going to demonstrate. Because you could argue this for forever. Nobody could prove that it means Mekuta'ot, but not Mefuzarot. Or Mefuzarot, not Mekuta'ot. It's impossible to prove. Yes, the word is, the term is semantically ambiguous. I mean, the exclusion. You know what Miyom Leyom means. But what does it come to exclude? Alright? Again, a contract is a contract, the constitution, any document, is not only what it says, but also what it comes to exclude. Alright? And we don't know what it comes to exclude. Or rather, you could argue one way or the other. And therefore comes Rav Huna, and that is the great Hiddush of Rav Huna that he means verse 4. Shall I tell him about what does mean to end the time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alright. Where is the word to end with an comes from? In the Torah. Let's see if any place comes in the Torah. Yes. No. Ta'ana.
Yeah.
Where were
they?
How?
With the Bitulah.
Yes. It says Amad. They don't say that's a Ta'an. That is a Ta'an. No. No. Where is the Ta'an? Where is the Tabu Ta'an? It has to do with donkeys. What? Simple. When the Yosef tells to his brothers,
Ta'anu
Be'ilechem. One second. If you look at Rashi, etc., etc., what does it mean, Ta'anu Be'ilechem?
Feed them, no?
Load the animals and go. And go fast. Load the animal. It makes simply, it makes no sense. Do you understand, Elliot, what I'm saying? Ta'anu Be'ilechem is normally studied. Means is put the load on the Be'ilechem and go and come back quick. It makes no sense. I mean, first of all, they got to load the animal. The Yosef Kimhi. He was a contemporary of the father and studied together with the father of Rambam in the Yeshua of Rabbi Yosef in Mega. Those are special issues, what they have not done like this. He explained that the word Tet Ayin Nun in Hebrew is like in Arabic. It means to prod. Right? Ta'anuga ayakem means prod your animal, your animals. Oh, I saw a picture of you. One of the things that you when you are riding, you prod the animal. You have to have what you have in the back of your spurs to prod the animal, and you go faster. All right, you go fast. So that is what it means to every time. Each one prods the other. Rambam has this in his quote, To'en benitan. I pride you. I know that is not true, but I want you to say something to see whether you're going to trip with the thing. And you'll do the same thing to me. To'en benitan. Now you understand what To'en benitan is? Now you understand what the word ta'ana means? Mm-hmm. Right? Alright, nothing to do with the ta'ana, to carry is an Aramaic word, it's not a Hebrew word. Mm-hmm. Alright, so therefore here we are in the laws of ta'an v'nit'an. Yes, ta'an v'nit'an, therefore, and so we want to eliminate certain ambiguity. Mm-hmm. So to eliminate the ambiguity of ta'an v'nit'an here, we add a word, we explain. Yes, it's an addendum to the law. All right. So now we understand what Avuna is saying. All right. And around this concept, we're going to develop a whole sugya. Not only a whole sugya, but to be a whole series of sugyot. Yes. So now we understand if we take the law as is, as Avuna, you may assume that this is a categoric law. That there are no exceptions to this law. That always has to be resufot. Always has to be contiguous. One after the other. That's what we assume. Alright? And now comes Chavod.
I'm just sorry. We're getting that because we're adding the words miyom liyom.
No. The miyom liyom is in the Mishnah. Comes Rav Huna. And if you would not have Rav Huna, you would not need the whole sugya. But why? Because the miyom liyom doesn't have to be contiguous one after the other.
But what he's saying is he's learning that the words miyom liyom are coming to teach us the sufot concept.
Yeah. Now suppose he would not have said this. Suppose he didn't say this. Suppose we are pre Rav Huna. Yes, because there is a generation between him and the Mishnah. Rav is the midway. The second generation of Emoraim.
And we're not clear.
So I would say, Shalosh Shanim, Miyom Miyom means you need 3 years, but they don't have to be contiguous. Therefore, in places like in Babel, in which there were areas, Bage means valleys, the enormous valleys, in which the people, they didn't plant, they left always 1 year fallow. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes?
Right.
Well, for sure that is there. It's not, not considered as an interruption.
Right.
And therefore, in 3 years, if somebody is Mahazik, year one, year three, and year five, it's perfectly all right. So what makes problematic to the people in Babel, In Pumbedita especially, which is the north of Babel, probably they had a lot, which Kurdistan and all these areas is around. So it is a statement of Rav Huna. We were happy until Rav Huna intervened. Do you understand? And now, one second. Now I am in Babel. Everybody plants 1, 3, 5. So now I bought a piece of field. A field. Do I supposed to plant it at number 2? I have a problem. My problem is Rav Huna. He is the problem. Does that what I'm saying? So comes Rav Hama, who is from that area, and this point of Rav Hama is before his teachers, and should be chronologically, should be the other way around. I have an idea why we changed the chronology, but he comes to say, no. Modeh Rav Huna. Rav Huna would concede. Beatra de Movare vage, that in a place, the mavare lashon sadebur, yes, we may be spared, beatra, the mavare, that they live follow the valley, that is more there, that you don't need resufot. Alright? Now, I just want to say, again, something that is important. For me, the word moder, as far as I remember, it means only, always means I have no proofs. No textual proofs. Yes? He cannot mention a baraita, or it's not that he heard it from him, because it's two generations removed. He probably didn't study Raha ever, Budavuna. And so therefore, moder means, the way I understand it is, it was debated among my friends or my colleagues, and we settled, and we came to the conclusion that he agrees that will concede that in our place in Kurdistan or it is also in those areas, you know, it's all right, you know, 1, 3, 5 would be all right. Doesn't have to be 1, 2, 3. Would be 1, 3, 5. That is more or less the way I understand it. All right.
So nobody's trying to seek the authorial intent. They're more or less saying,
"Yeah,
we're."
I'm sorry, Sarah. Authorial intent is a theological concept. No, no, really. Who knows what the author of the business is?
Yeah, right.
You know, even when we say in American Constitution that, you know, with the intent of the founder, but me or them is the intent of the founder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know, my own intent half an hour ago. Mm-hmm. Yes, I don't know. Mm-hmm. No, it's true. So, but means more or less that we're pastanim.
Mm-hmm.
Pastanim, you know.
Which is a subjective thing.
Yeah, it's subjective. That
the group feeling at that
moment.
Yeah,
and so on.
Now, Rav Huna is the same thing? He has a tradition from the Mishnah? He's
no.
The same thing?
No, same thing. You know, and he has no. It doesn't mean no authority. By the way, it's very important that the rabbis were not shy. If they would have a proof to that, they will give you a proof. In the morning, in the Sheikh and the Kuzari will always see, for example, when he writes the Kuzari, it's so clear. He writes, because in Arabic there are different words for this and that, and he says an opinion, a view, you know. And if there is a proof, he will tell you. Now, unfortunately, when they translate into Hebrew into English, they translate all words as it's a proof. It's not a proof. It's an opinion, a view. You know, they were careful, you know, or a belief, you know. All right? So, here, Rav Huna is making a statement. Yes? And it's not based upon anything. Seliha. Now, I mean, but he has the right. Like just like our judges, have the right to interpret our constitution. Now, Rav Huna had the right to interpret the Mishnah, and he gave you his view, you know. And it happened to be accepted. That we see that everybody accepted, but they put ifs and buts. You know, to give a. But that's the way law functions. A judge makes a pesach halacha, and then 50 years later somebody will quote it and say, yes, but he didn't mean in that particular way. And that's exactly what he's doing here. In other words, the Torah, the Talmud is law, is jurisprudence. By the way, you would like this, my great Hindus, you know my Hindus and jurisprudence, yes? It's simple. Jurisprudence is a translation of the word. How do you say in Hebrew jurisprudence? What?
Mishpat
Ebrin? I'm sure. It's halakha. How? What jurisprudence is made of two words. Juris, which means the law. And then prudentia. Yeah. And prudentia, we use it in English. Be prudent. Your mother, when you went to school, act with prudence. Means be careful. Alright? But this is said to a person when he's walking on the street. You say prudentia in Latin. Be careful as we walk. Look what there is. Jurisprudence means the law of prudence. How would you translate this? Well, how would you say walk in and be careful of the look, be attentive as you walk. How are you saying this in Hebrew? Halakha. Yes. All right. So jurisprudentia is a translation, a Latin translation of the word halakha. Prudent, be, you know, careful. Yes, he's a prudent man. Means he walks carefully. He looks where he's going. Yes, all right. Good. And of course, jurisprudence. The word jurisprudence came up, of course, before halakha. Yes, and the Jews took it away from the Romans. But the truth is, we should always remember. That's why I want in a school we should teach this thing to our children, that Justinian wrote his famous quote, which is not even 1/8 of the Mishnah, in the year 500. About 500, and the Mishnah was published much later, in the year 180 to 220, but we took it from, we were inspired by Justinian.
We have something even closer than halacha to that.
Yes.
Hevu metunim b'din.
Yes, of course. Of course. The whole idea, yes. But it's not a word. It's so nice. Dalet amot shel halacha. It's fantastic. You know? All right? And tamir hachamim. Marbim Mahrokot Ba'olam. No? Why? Because Hachamim, they teach halakha. And the law, the purpose of law is to find common ground. Yes? The most important, when you in Shulchan Aruch, also in the Gemara, the first thing that the Bedin try to make is what? Reshara. Find a common ground between the conflicting parties. All right. So halakha is for us.
That's a question. So it's interesting that you have a Mishnah, and then you have an addendum by Rav Huna.
Yes.
Okay. So that's the status of his hidush is an addendum.
Yeah.
And then later, or maybe not so much later, in Pumbedita, they make another addendum.
Of course.
To the addendum
of Rav Huna. That's the way law operates. Uh-huh. That is the way law is a living thing. And addendum upon an addendum upon. That's why whoever says thing that you read the all the Pesachim from before to inspire you, not to imitate. Yes, in the son of Abraham, he says the oldest precedents in the Gemara are to inspire the Hagamim to imitate, because there are not two moments identical in life. Yes.
Case law.
What?
Concept of case law.
Yeah, but case law means yes, of course, and that's the another point which is terribly important, which we forgot. How you make the halakha? Ah, hakam pelonid. The Gemara in Bava Vata, Daf Kof Lamed, says, En nadayan ela ma she'enav ro'ot. I respect to our peloni, I respect to our amoni. But now the law came before me. I read all of them. They inspire me. But now I have. I cannot say that Rabbi Bar is dead. Or is on our bike. So I have to take always with kavod. Yes, with the hakamim so on. And this is with with all the humility. We have to you make your own pesach halacha. Anyhow, here you see halacha in action. Now the Mishnah is being modified in a very nice, elegant way. All right, yeah. No proofs. Rabbi Huna is a Rosh Yeshiva, super Rosh Yeshiva, and he says Pesufot. All right, fine. Now, how do we know that he is right? Because everybody in a daf and a half further, they're always agreeing with him. They're discussing the law. They're arguing the law. They accepted the law. It is in English. I call. It is a settled law. Why? Because happened to be everybody accepts it.
What motivated him
to add the concept of the tufot? It's from the word miyom liyom?
No.
Just
no. He's a judge. He's a Rosh Yeshiva. He's professor of law at Columbia University. No, brother, to Harvard Law School.
And said something's not making sense.
That's right.
I need to get into
it. And that brother said, he's wrong. No, he meant Resufot. Shalosh shanim she'amru Resufot. How do you know? He's not telling you, I know. They say, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Amar Rabuna, Amar Rabbeinu HaKadosh. They say this. Or Shamaki she'omrim. He's telling you this. And in a sense, but very respectfully, he's horeg on the Mishnah. That's what he's talking.
It comes to a realization.
There had to be a resufot. And if you're going to leave it a machloket between two parties, keturot or mefuzarot, you never finish.
And that the resufot is not categorical. Right.
Just like he made a condition on Rabbi Nakados, he's making a condition on him. You understand?
Perfect.
It makes sense. There was a man that I respect very much, and I know the secret. I was told many, many years ago that Benjamin Cardozo was Baki in Mishnayot. All right. By the way, in Yom Kippur, you used to wear alpargatas. You know this? We put frack with how you call this
top hat
and alpargatas. All right, that's I can imagine him because he I'm sure he had a sense of humor, because otherwise you cannot be a great judge. So it is, and somebody told me that he was Baki Bamishnayot, and I think I know how. The book that you see that for me. In the Spanish and Portuguese in England, they translated the Mishnayot in English. Beautiful translation. And I suspect that this translation somehow reached his hand. Right? Oh, maybe also he knew Hebrew. I'm sure that he was a terribly intelligent man. Alright? But in my book, in the Horizontal Society, I bring one case. And which is not what's happening in Mamash, explode from the Gemara and Baba Kama and all the other things. A famous case of his. So I bring it that the connection. Alright. So here you see, in this Cardozo, Ha'ar Shalom, he says something very important. If a law is perfect for this moment, for today, then will be of necessity imperfect for tomorrow, because society is constantly changing.
Imperfect, that's right.
Imperfect for tomorrow. Yes? So, was it perfect this? Yes. So therefore, it's not going to be too perfect for tomorrow. And that's why we need judges, and we need to interpret the law and to continuously modify in a nice way. There is errors. Laguna. Derek Harris, and so forth. They say nothing, no, because no, this. Everyone is, if you're intelligent, you understand. Yes? And you're making a case, and that is the way the law continues to be progress. One last word. I always tell to my students in school, law is not geometry. It's not geometry. So forever it's going to be the triangle is a triangle forever, fine, but law needs interpretation, continuous interpretation to be applicable, to be alive. Yes, and you have to, that's the interaction between the legal mind. Yes, which was there with the Hakamim, there were legal minds, and this. One more point, as I had that, I'm getting excited with this. I talked to somebody. He says, "Come to visit me on Sunday." Somebody, a young, older than you, but much younger than me. And so I said, "You talk about Aaron Bamis." So I said, "Listen," I said. I told him with respect, of course, although he's much younger. If somebody is not a first-rate halachist, which means a first-rate Talmudist, you cannot tell me anything about Rambam, because Rambam, he had a legal mind. a legal mind, when Cardozo or others, yes, even they're writing about philosophy, they're writing as lawyers. Rambam is principally the greatest lawyer that the Jewish tradition ever produced. So even when he speaks of, I don't know, Rizal Muhammad, you know, he's thinking in legal terms. You know, so you can talk about the philosophy of Rambam, and if you don't know law, yeah, do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So anyhow, this is the case. He's changing the law, he's modifying the law, he's doing it, but he's doing it in a nice way. Hakam HaKlub Alav HaShalom used to do the same thing. When I remember somebody forgot the whiskey to make Be'ol Hamez and whiskey. The guy had 8 bottles of whiskey and he had a daughter that he had to get engaged in this and so on. Hakam HaKlub. That's what he did, you know. All right, and other things, you know, and somebody, I remember Isaac Shalom passed away, and his son, and his daughter, he breaks the law. You know, he takes in consideration all the factors, and he creates, you know, with the dishwasher and the rabbi and stuff. I don't know if you may remember, or you may remember this thing. So, what he does, you know, that's what he does, the same thing. That's what he does. All right. Fine. Chabot.
My daughter married Ashkenazi.
Mm-hmm.
Complains to this day.
Mm-hmm.
How lucky we are. We only need one dishwasher.
Yeah. By the way, I would say something very important for us. Being an intelligent Sephardi means to embrace and we accept. I don't think I don't think that being a Sephardi means to be anti-Ashkenazi. The only thing I make a distinction, and I think that us by not making the decision we insulting the Ashkenazi when we think that Ashkenazi equal ballpark. No, 99% of the Ashkenazi retrograde ballpark. All right, in Eretz Israel, the Haredi in Eretz Israel is much more modern and more open than Borough Park, because many of them serve in the army and they interact with other Jews, which others. So Borough Park is sui generis. Yes, it's something special, something like this. So I don't consider them as a real Ashkenazi. I consider Ashkenazi the people that we see around here, some more, some less religion and so on. But very important, being Sephardi means to embrace every other tradition with respect, with kavod. We don't have to follow everything, every item, but yes, with kavod and derech eretz. Kavod.
It's funny because Avunah's addendum is a humrah.
I don't know if it's a humrah. Why you say it's a humrah?
Well, you can't count
nukutaot. No.
That's a humrah.
No, this is a given, because the Mishnah says miyom leyom. So
right.
You have to give something.
Okay, and then not is a humrah.
But this is also all right. This in this case is claim and counterclaim. But I don't know what
is the who. The humrah for one side
is kula for the other side. Yeah, it's to every time claim and counterclaim.
No, I'm saying in the eyes of a farmer. Of a claimant,
but the
purchaser,
the seller,
right,
or the purchaser?
Right.
All right,
right.
So
right.
It's in that.
Right.
How about
Hamma?
No, I think it's Hamma. Hamma. Yeah, you know what Hamma means? No, that's my theory. Yonah in Arabic and Aramaic is Hamami. Yeah. Without allegation, Rav Hamma. Nothing to do with Ad Hamma. Hamma.
Adav?
Adav. Adav. Yes?
Like
a bird? Yeah. Adav, yes. Like Rav Yonah? It is Rav Yonah. Right?
Hamma, Rav Hamma.
Like Columbus. Columbus means?
Palomba
means, Columbus means, you know, in Judeo Spanish, Columbre, when you use the word Columbre? No? Yeah, it's your father.
No, Palomba.
Palomba is Columbre. Yes. Mm-hmm. let me know whether I'm right or wrong. Columbre.
And how do I know the... we would say...
Palombra, yeah.
The keynote we translate into Ladino.
And you say Palombra?
To Palomba encarcelada.
Yeah, but ask him about that Columbre.
Okay.
All right?
Shall we have?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. All right. But ask him about Columbre.
Boreala.
Right.
Boreala.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Mesura, right?
All right. So, fine. The only Sephardi who speaks both Arabic and Ladino. That's good. That's why I find the things very common, you know. Mm-hmm. Very, I feel comfortable in both traditions. How old? Yeah, explain what you mean. De Movare, I think. Movare, yes. Yes.
The Rab Hama says that the point or the ruling of Rab Hunna is not absolute, and therefore you don't have to have resufot if you're in a place where everybody leaves the field unplanted every other year.
Alright. So could you explain the word Movare?
Oh, Movare is a verb around the word Bur. Bur or Lehoir, it means to leave unplanted.
And can you explain the relationship between that and our English culture, cultivation?
So boor in English is a word, B-O-O-R. It means someone who's uncultivated, because they look at culture like planting. You have to plant and weed and plow and tend the garden of somebody's character, or if you don't, they don't grow. So a boor is someone who's never tended to.
And culture is what you plant in a person, and if it's not perfect, so we have the relationship between culture and this. And do you know how you say culture in Greek?
I'm sure. Yes.
By there.
Culture itself means to plant.
To plant. And how do we, how do you, the very interesting thing, you would like this. Shema Veni Musar Avicha. How do we translate it into Greek, the Septuagint? By there. Musar there is by there.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we translate it into Arabic? Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Culture. Musar?
Adami.
No, with a bed. Adam. Adami is somebody who has Adam. Yes? Adam is culture. So Musar doesn't mean to shake and do. We love Ramhal. But that's not. The word Musar means Adam. Yes? Alright? Alright. So it means a person.
Culture.
Culture. It's a culture person. And how do you get the culture? Semaveni, the culture. Musa comes from a word, Mosef, Limsor. It's what your father bequeathed you, which is beautiful, you know. Semaveni Musa Avicha means what your father bequeathed best into you, which is the Adab. Yes? When I say Ma'ad Adab. Yes, Adab means the guy. Yes, poor Adab. Yes, all right. So it's nice. Chavod.
Peshita.
Yes.
La.
Yeah.
Sericha.
Yes.
Diika.
No, so what Peshita means?
That's settled. You don't need.
It's settled.
To settle.
It's unnecessary. Yes. All right. And this is law. It's not Peshita. On the contrary. Isarija.
De ika de mover, de ika
de mover,
de mover, de ika de zara, de haigabra moveraha.
Yeah.
Mahu de tema amarale imitaha de didahu ibe ailach le misrea, kamashmia lan de amale hada behulevada la masena de intar, viname de hachin yahali de abda tafe.
Now let's explain. Yes.
So this is interesting. It's more like more ta'anot and.
It's ta'anot, claiming, counter claim. Ta'an v'nitan. This is it. That's the ta'anot. Ta'an v'nitan. He could give his ta'ana, and he could give the counter ta'ana, and that's why we have to clarify the point.
Mm-hmm.
That if you would leave it without clarifying this point, then we have a ta'ana. And a counter ta'ana. We want to avoid this ta'anot and counter ta'anot. Because ta'ana and counter ta'ana, sometimes you can never resolve it.
Uh-huh.
So therefore they make a special law to minimize Ta'ana and counter ta'ana. Tohen b'ni ta'an. And now he's going to explain.
So remember that the qualification of al-hama is that in a place where everybody leaves it fallow, plants one year, leaves it unplanted one year, plants another year, that everybody knows that Rab Hunna's law wouldn't apply. What about, though, kind of a hybrid situation where there's a valley and some people skip years and some people don't skip years? So then the one who wants to acquire the Hazakah by skipping years would say, well, I don't have to because that's the law. Even Rab Hunna would agree. And the other guy would say, no.
The original law, the counter.
Only where everybody skips, you could skip. Otherwise, it is too far.
And not only this, you should have established your ownership. Yes, some people plant. You should establish your ownership by planting. But if you plant, if you would have planted the first year, you bought it for me, in year number one, why didn't you plant it then? Oh, you have a garden plant. But you should establish your ownership. Or ownership. Yes, that's the word. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Alright. And so, I don't have to start. Because if it's some movir and some that are not movir, I can make a choice. You have a choice. That's the great Hiddush. Yes? Alright? Now you can say, no, in this case, there are some people who plant. Why don't you choose like the people who plant?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy says, no, I chose the other way around. Yes? Inameh.
And Inameh is even better.
Yes.
So the first one is, no, you don't have to. You could skip years if you want. And you could say, the reason I'm skipping years is too costly to plant every year because I don't want to be the only one hiring a shomer for the field.
Yeah.
That's a little more stringent because then the original owner could say, but in this valley it's not expensive. Shomerim are cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't accept, you don't get hazakah. Then inamez, v'hachi nihal, I just prefer it that way. Because I think, unlike my neighbor, that the crop will come out better if I crop rotate, if I skip years.
In America, they do have a rotation in many things. But I don't know about the
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the farmers didn't rotate, and they depleted all the land. Came the agricultural, the Department of Agriculture, started teaching them, I think, in the 30s.
They must have about that.
No, a crop rotation.
Yes. The crop rotation.
Is they ever leaving the ground fallow for more than 1 year at a time?
I don't think so. But maybe.
So could one speculate that Shalosh Shanim means you planted once, you may have left it fallow, and then the fact that you're now planting a second time in the same field establishes your Chazakah?
No, you need 3 years, that's everybody.
That is 3 years.
Well, 3 years of actual planting.
That's what I'm debating. I'm saying the fact that you were able to come back and plant in the same place after you left it fallow 1 year is the proof. And so you have your 3 years, even though what
this
left
will be providing in a place that they leave the fields fallow. Yes, but I don't know.
No, I think Harambam says, I'm not sure,
yes.
But for sure Yosef Ben Megas, you need the 3 full years of planting. You don't get to count the skipped years.
That's the standard interpretation.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
But there are some people who believe that.
If you left a year unplanted and then you actually were able then to plant the third year,
that is three years.
That seems like
I understand
proof.
But this is this is a claim. This is a ta'ana. Mm-hmm. And ta'ana is a counter ta'ana. So the hachamim, they try always, I mean not always, they try sometimes, okay, to limit the stuff because you could continue being ta'an forever. Alright?
So it's funny, this sugya has so many ta'an v'nita'an.
It is. That's why Rambam brings this halakha in the laws of ta'an v'nita'an.
So I'm saying,
not in things to do with kinyan of real estate property and so on. It doesn't bring this in ta'an v'nita'an.
So I'm saying part one and part two is
like, ta'an v'nita'an. Rambam brings in ta'an v'nita'an.
Do we ascribe that? Do we blame that on the fact that even from the point of the Mishnah itself was very not ambiguous but very clearly missing textual source and
the thing is that this is a question of claim and counterclaim. And the rabbis wanted just to limit the possibilities, you know.
To bracket them.
Yes, to bracket. So because this is also something unfair about Toen Meitan. What is it that a good Toen could force a compromise? You know.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because you can never finish,
right.
And therefore, that is exactly what the bad guy would aim at. Because I could be Toen forever, and therefore the other person at the end has to compromise.
So the question I guess I'm asking is does the fact that the Mishnah lacks the same strength of a pasuk behind it lend itself to this?
I don't know. I think it's intelligent of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is flexible. Because the laws of Toen Meitan are flexible.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know? This is not like Masabe Halav and Halu Shabbat.
Do we find other
of course.
Mishnayot that also seem to have a lack of solid textual...
Yeah. This is Masechet Nezikin in Baba's Messiah and so on. Shena Mochadim Zerah, Zomer Sheli Sheyev, Zeh Omer Kula Sheli, Zomer Kula Sheli. That's a perfect Toen Meitan. Yes. It's part of...
It's likely that this is just a category.
It's Toen Meitan. What are you going to do? In this part of human nature. Chavod. Shall we explain every word?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Let's see. The Ika de Movar, the Ika de Zara. There's some people who lay the land fallow. There are some, the zara, the plant.
Yes.
The high gabra.
Chose to mubarak with a mapik in their hand.
This particular mahazik decided to let it lay fallow. So.
Maulatema, ma'ana, that is Toen.
Why you need abhama? Maulatema, what would you have thought? Or
I would have thought we could claim.
You could have claimed that the original owner could say. Amaleh, the original owner, would say to him, "In itaha, tadidahu. If it is true that it's yours, ibbe'aylach lemizre'aha. You should have, or you need to plant it.
Yeah.
You're
to establish, to establish dominion over it. Yes."
Kamashmiya.
Well, that's right. Lemizre'a,
lizroa ota.
Ota sare. Yes.
Thank you.
Kamashmiya lan de amaleh. So Rab Hamaz. Qualification shows you or sets the rules of the game that no, the mahazik could say, "Hada bechulevara lamasena deitar." I don't have to bear the burden just to show my ownership to go be the only guy and hire the one.
Hada to have one field in Kulevara in the whole valley. Yes, lamasena deitar. I cannot guard it. I cannot guard one single field. Or more than one field, whatever it is, one field in the entire valley. Yes? Uh-huh. So that's what you're asking too much for me. Whether this means because there would be expenses or because physically would be difficult, then it's immaterial.
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
It could easily be both.
Both, yes.
Because suppose you're the only planted field in a large valley. So the animals are going to come to that one
place. Or the marauders, how do you say marauders?
Marauders?
Marauders and so on.
Poachers. There's no natural barrier.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's many.
That's why it's a valley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Also, they practice crop rotation in valleys because... they're fed by silt runoff, you know, rain runoff, and it accumulates in the bottom of the valley. So if you let it accumulate over time, then you have more of a crop, even though you plant half the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or this mahazik could use this as a possible ta'ana, and we allow that also. In this fashion, what I'm doing means skipping years. Nihali, I like it. It's pleasing to me.
Beneficial.
That the crop, the land, produces more.
Yeah. All right. So we have the first comment in Pumilita is on behalf of Rabuna.
Uh-huh.
Correct. Yes. We accept Rabuna. Mm-hmm. All right? And it's a given almost. All right? And we need, even we have to find an excuse why Rav Hama is, by the way, now I said Rav Hama, that well means the pigeon and so on. Because I taught Gemara in Bar Ilan, and I don't remember once I was teaching the Sugya. I forgot which Sugya, and I said, said Hama. Mm-hmm. I said, no, correct, it's Hama. And then a Temani student, yes, that in Teman they pronounce it Hama, not Hama. Mm-hmm. So I asked him, what does it mean? He didn't know. But I told Muhammad it means from pigeon and so on. So, mm-hmm. You know. How about?
I'm sorry, you said this
is the fourth?
Okay.
Number two.
Yeah?
It's supposed to be accepting Rabuna. You correct? Mm-hmm. Yes? Now we're going to see the contrary.
So we don't accept Rav Huna, why do you need to clarify it?
Oh, okay.
You just said, well, we don't follow Rav Huna.
Uh-huh, okay. Got it.
Now, but we're going to see that before that, some people question the Pesach of Rav Huna. Uh-huh. And these are Abaye Verava. All right?
They question or they support?
Well, but anyhow, somebody question, uh-huh. may ask a question at the yeshiva, uh-huh. yes, and Abaye Verava had to defend the question, this, uh-huh. all right? So, again, that is good because it's supposed, now you understand where is he coming from?
Yes, absolutely.
All right? Yes, I mean, we'll go back. How about?
Tenan, Chesed, Batim.
So, not only Haka of Sadeh and Fields, so has the Kata Batim and the Hasidis and this. So, now the Batim. Yes? We don't know what happened at night. How old?
We have Batim, the Bimama, Yadae, Belelia, La Yadae.
So, therefore, they're not continuous.
You, Rav Huna, said you have to prove Risufot, right? Yes. You have to prove, it's an evidentiary thing, the Hazakah, right? Yeah. So therefore, it doesn't make sense, or it's not parallel. If in the Bayit you want to acquire a Hazakah, you would have to... Nobody could prove both day and night. So yes. How are you going to make a Hazakah in a Bayit if you require a Risufot, and then you must prove that it's...
How could you prove? You are in your apartment. I see you, I mean, talking in the air. I see you only during the day. They only see you during the day. Maybe at night you were not using the apartment. Maybe you knew that this guy goes to work during the day and he comes to his apartment at night. So what you do? You go to his apartment during the day and when the guy, before you, you run. So how could you know? Did you understand? That is the question against Rav Huna. You think that has to be continuous, correct? Continuous has to be continuous? Yeah? Can you be continuous in a house? Apparently no. Uh-huh. Maybe somebody is smart cooking. I remember when I was a little boy, I used to read about the stories, children's stories about wolf and those on the bear. So the guy goes to work and the bear comes, bear mommy, daddy, and so comes during the day. And then before the guy comes, then they run, and then the other guy suspects that because must have been something coming. Uh-huh. You know, they go to work and then other people come to the house. You don't know. Mm-hmm. All right? So you see somebody during the day in the house, mm-hmm. yes? And you don't know what's going to happen at night, do you? Mm-hmm. So now we have a kushya against Rav Huna.
They can't have the same kushya on a sadeh because nobody works the sadeh at night.
At night. It's impossible to, yes.
Yeah,
so people do live in the house.
So I'm saying, so you can see another person who has a Sadeh at night?
No, you don't see it, but you don't, because in Sadeh, nobody uses the Sadeh at night. It's not usable at night.
Yeah, but it's not even that. It's that the concept of day and night doesn't apply to Sadeh.
Yeah.
The proof contiguity is yes. continuously.
Yeah, yeah, because also it's impossible.
The crop grows.
Yes,
and the crop is a successful crop.
Now, but in a house, how do I know I see the guy during the day? Yeah, I could imagine that, but maybe the guy at 5 o'clock, he goes, because he knows that the owner is going to come. Yes, we don't know. We cannot imagine the poverty of pre-industrial times. And the people with the word squatters all over. Yes. How do you call it, squatters in modern English?
Homeless?
No. Palestinians.
You know. The concept is you go to an office, you work for, you don't own that office, but you're there from 8 in the morning till 6 in the morning.
It's going to make a point about the office. In Mahazad used to have offices like this. In other places, even, you're too young, but even in my days, there were people that lived in the same stores.
Investment bankers.
The Chinese laundry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The bakeries. The Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
You see them in the back sometimes. The chairs. Yes.
But also in people that they had the regular stores. They lived in the store or in the back of a store and so on. And but in Mahazano, the Gemara is going to make the point.
So you can't assume that a person, if you see him leave his house in the morning, that he wasn't there at night?
We don't know. Today,
if he has his bed and his furniture.
We don't know his bed. Maybe somebody else is using somebody else's bed. We don't know. So, but in a court of law, you have to be able to prove things.
So that question wouldn't come up for a Sadeh?
No.
Why? Because
Sadeh is not used at night. It's unusable at night. Yes. For all practical purposes, a Sadeh, from the point of view of law, does not even exist at night. Today we have all kinds of things, light, you could it's impossible, you cannot, you know. It's an unworkable, unseeable, so the Sadeh, so they are very intelligent, the Hakamim, they take off the Sadeh of the attack and the bite.
Right.
That's the vulnerable point. Yes. And again, you could see somebody during the day. Yeah, suppose somebody leaves, I work 6 o'clock, somebody is somebody could come, sees him, enters in the house. He's also already taking the subway. Yes. So they go occupy the house. Yes. So you saw, meanwhile, you saw, what you saw is the intruder. Yes, not the real thing. Right?
The babysitter.
The babysitter, yeah.
What is the Tanakh from?
From my Mishnah.
From the Mishnah.
Yes. This Mishnah.
And who is saying the Habatim?
Somebody in the Yeshiva, we don't know the name, but it was asked by the Yeshiva.
Okay.
And we know the Yeshiva, Pumberita, because we know the answers come from two Hachamim from Pumberita.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, one last question. What's the difference between Tanena and Tanan?
Oh, because here, Esreha, Amaravuna, look in number one.
Right.
Shalosh Shanim She'amru, Resufot. Amru, where Amru? In the Mishnah. Tanena, this Mishnah that you said here, that Mishnah Tanena, and
you just quoted.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, just quoted is Tanena.
All right. The same, the Gemara is a legal document. Every term is a technical term. To assume that somebody who has no training in language and so on, they could understand what it just goes into the realm of the fabulous. It's not possible. So every word is the Talmud is a discussion of the highest. The most proficient legal minds of Israel around the constitution of Am Yisrael. There were no, we didn't have greater people than that. To assume that somebody who with zero background, yes, could understand the discussion, the argument of the Supreme Court of America, whatever I would say is ridiculous. Well, we are closer to the American legal system in mind than to the Supreme Court of Israel over the centuries. So it is impossible, you know. And in a sense, they heard this voice, because later on they discover they mature or so on, and they discover that what they thought is not really true, or it makes no sense. Of course, it cannot make sense because we're never trained. Yes, and then they become the solution, or they become. So they have to do other things to because the Torah doesn't make too much sense, so they can make excuses why I could do this or that. I say this in almost a fatherly way, in a grandfatherly way. The skinny, you know, things don't jive, you know. Coward.
Amar, man masil abatim shivare.
The only people who could testify that this person was dwelling in the house, and we're going to see it's not so simple, are the neighbors. Neighbors always know whether you're inhabiting that day or that. You hear, you smell, you this and so on, this and the people. So, by the way, in a Jewish, there's no thing. The neighbor knows everything about you. He knows the color of your underwear, the what you this and so on. So there was they know everything. This is true. This is absolutely true. Yes. And my grandmother used to tell me that the following goes: you are Shabbat, Eli. You're home in Shabbat. A neighbor could come just like that with all the food that they cook on Friday night, all that, said, oh, I brought the camera, let's eat together. That's it, that's right. Yes. It's just like this, you know. They bring the hameen or the bayit or whatever, they bring it as a tab. There was
no formality.
No formality.
Yeah.
Yes. So they knew everything.
Once upon a time. Yeah.
Yeah. They knew everything about everybody. Else. All right. So yes. Now, but this answer, there's some problems with this answer. We're going to see what the problems may be with the answer. Now, Sereha, and we're going to finish with Rava Amar. Yes.
Rava Amar kehon de'atu bet be'amre anan aramnua min meh.
Alright, now a very important technical point. A says Amar Avaye. B doesn't say Amar Rava. Says Rava Amar. Kilal from Chachamim Sefaradim. When we change the order, it means that Rava disagrees with Avaye.
That's written, actually.
Yes, I mean, the Kalim.
In the Rif.
In Masalei Brachot. Yes, at the beginning, of course. Yes, of course. It's a Kilat. I mean, it's all right. So now, why he disagrees? What's the point of contention? This we're not going to study tonight. But we're going to see, tell you what Rava says. And I believe that what Rava says is going to be modified.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So explain to us what Rava says.
So Rava said you don't have to, I think you don't have to bring the neighbors to prove the mahazik was there. Either the mahazik or his tenants could come and say we rented it from this guy who claims to have bought it from the original owner, and we lived there 3 years both day and night, and so we know we were there. His hazakah is established because we are his tenants.
The tenants could come and establish the hazakah for the person who claims ownership.
Mm-hmm.
We rented it from him.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in this house for 3 years continuously. Aramam is going to reject this point.
Isn't that assuming it's an investment property and not owner?
Yeah, it could be. Oh yeah, it could be. It makes a difference. But here you have a perfect case. You bought a house, you bought an apartment, and you rented it to me. Now comes the person who sold the apartment and says, I never sold you the apartment. Where were you for 3 years? And he says, I was 3 years. How do I come and says, I rented from him. Alright? for 3 years and continuously.
But you could only use that if there was rental people involved, if there was a
tenant
involved.
But let us assume, I understand, let us assume you bought an apartment. You don't want it for yourself. And after 3 years, comes the original owner and says, oh, I never said it to you. Show me.
I can bring my tenant and I can say, look, I've had leased out space and these are the guys that are paying me.
Yes, that is what he's saying here. Al-Ambam is going to contest this point.
Still doesn't prove that you own it.
Yes, it proves that you own it.
Why?
No, because
I leased it out to them, but I fooled the other guy.
Fine.
I'm carrying on my business.
No problem. Yes, but the point is why you, the original owner, you saw that people are living here, why you didn't come and contested my tenure? You never contested my tenure. You could have said, I came at night. I saw that I saw there's nobody here, so I didn't know that people were living here. Or I came during the day, I saw nobody here. No, these people were here day and night. So if it's true that this is your property, you had 3 years, you could have contested my tenure here. And you did not. So this is a proof. I mean, because again, I know that you came here. This is tenure in Jewish law. Is that a substantive proof? Is that a proof that it's ownership? What the guy is saying, I bought this house, I had a good deed, and I lost it. And the law is that after 3 years, you don't have to keep the deed, and I explained this why. But I had a deed.
Or you didn't have to have a deed, you could have had the substantive hazaka.
Yes. Okay, whatever it is.
You had an adequate transfer.
Transfer. You had an adequate transfer. Transference. And the proof is...
Here I am,
and you never contested this. You never contested my tenure here in this apartment. Or the tenure of my tenants. Yes? So therefore... You have to bring the proof that I'm not the rightful owner. So now Harambam is going to contest this.
Only if the Baal Hehaser is Toin. Right? But if the Baal doesn't challenge that.
That's a different story. Yes.
Then that works.
But Harambam, I think that Harambam is going to say the following. What this person say, if the guy is Toin.
Yes.
Al-Amam is going to come to the following. He's going to interpret the Gemara differently than what we said. Al-Amam is going to say like this. If the original owner doesn't say you're illegal here, it's fine. But if the original owner says, you tenants, you were illegally here, that's the point of Al-Amam. Then the tenants can say, no, we were legal here. The tenants we will have to bring another. And that is what Monzotra says in A.
Yes.
That's the way Aramam explains it. In A. Amar Monzotra, Ita'in be'amad. Letu tre sahade. You bring two. Letu means him, them. Seyabi'u. Yes. Letu tre sahade. This harubel darube terak senim bi anades. Anatat anad. We have to bring the witnesses. That's the source of Harambam.
All right, but only if the Baal
Tohen. Of course.
Except if this mahazikim or the tenant are rochalim.
Yeah.
Then.
The way Harambam, the halakha of Harambam is based upon Mor Sotra.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
More or less exactly what Rabbi Yosef Ibn Meir said.
This is it, no?
Yeah.
All right. It's
cleaner than. We don't know what we have from Rabbi Hanan because of its manuscript fragments.
Mm-hmm.
But in the reef also, and in Yosef Ibn Meir, it's exactly what Harambam.
I will do better than you. So we're going to when is the next class? Wednesday? Wednesday night.
Right.
We're going to Hosin to Wednesday?
Yeah.
Hosin to Wednesday. Hosin to Chua.
This Wednesday?
No, this Wednesday, no, because we go to the Hatuna.
Right.
So we're coming back Tuesday, and the Hashem, Wednesday,
we could be in commission.
Commission again. All right? So we're not skipping any day.
Right. What about the website? Is the website back up?
No. No, did it?
I don't know. No, it's for a week now.
Hijacked.
It's got, not hijacked, it's a misassignment of the address, right?
Right.
You type in moreshetsefarad.org, you get some weird page of some trademark partners.
Yeah, but now it's under construction.
So what that means, all this moreshetsefarad stuff is there on the server, but they confuse the... When you type in the
so how do you solve this problem?
I know someone has to bother the GoDaddy people.
What does it mean, GoDaddy? Yeah.
It's a company that sponsors websites for.
Uh-huh. So what your girl could do it. Elliot, your girl could do it.